We've had one customer who's had a cannabis recall a couple of years ago because they found a carcinogen on their glove and it transferred onto the cannabis product, and they had a recall and a fine. And that glove is probably used, and I'm not going to mention the brand because they'd sue me for one thing, but it's probably used in about 30% of the food industry in the US. And so workers in the food industry are wearing that glove with the carcinogen on it, but no one's ever testing in the food industry. It's the fact that the cannabis industry is really well monitored in some states, and so they're testing for these things.
Everybody's got to eat, and nobody likes getting sick. That's why heroes toil in the shadows, keeping your food safe at all points, from the supply chain to the point of sale. Join industry veterans Francine L. Shaw and Matt Ragucci for a deep dive into food safety. It all boils down to one golden rule. Don't eat poop. Don't eat poop.
Francine and I, say hello, Francine.
Hello, Matt.
You're actually supposed to say hello, Francine, but whatever.
And so it begins.
And we're here with Steve. Steve, how do you pronounce your last name?
Ada.
And we've actually talked about you in our podcast before, and tell everybody what you do.
Right, we're a New Zealand-based company that came to the US 7 or 8 years ago. We sell disposable gloves, and we're on a mission to save the US food industry firstly, but then the rest of the industries, medical, et cetera, one glove at a time. We have found that the industry all over the world is just really lazy in the way they're passing on information and technology advances to the end users of disposable gloves.
Awesome. And so before we launch into what it is you do, we're here at Food Safety Consortium with Food Safety Tech. And just quick question, we've only been here for what, a few hours? But I know you and your team are at just about every conference in the world because I see you over and over and over again. I keep saying we don't allow New Zealanders here in the US, but that's obviously not true. So what?
We don't invite our guests.
Well, we got to treat everybody equally.
Don't be nice because we're out in public and just not in private, okay?
It's okay, Francine. I've been insulted by the best, I can assure you. And the Australians are actually the best, but you know, we love it here. We've lived in California for the last 7 years and South Lake Tahoe, which is a horrible place to live, as you can imagine.
Oh, yeah.
In the mountains and the lakes. And we love being here. And one of the things I often say to people, just to pat the Americans on the back, is you're all crazy. But the good thing is most of you are the good crazy that says we can get stuff done.
Yeah.
And it's the only country in the world where you can do that.
So this is what I'm going to say. I'm going to look at our listeners as far as countries. If New Zealand is not on that list, this will not air.
Pressure. Can I just make a quick phone call?
So I know you've been to massive conferences because I've seen you at the NRA. And I've also seen you down in conferences, like smaller ones like the Food Safety Consortium and Food Safety Summit. So what do you see as the difference between the two?
We have been. We've been to everything. We've been to the confectionery shows, the convenience stores shows, the IAFP. So you've got this range of very commercial to very scientific. And the Food Safety Consortium, we were here pre-pandemic as well, and we've just returned now that things have settled down a bit. And I think it's a really nice mix of both of those. There's some commercial people here. There's a lot of quality auditor type people. And there's some, as we know, the FDA and the USDA and the sort of regulatory people. And it's pretty intimate. You know, it's not a huge conference, so we get to talk to a lot of people about stuff, and they're actually pretty interested. We often say we're the glove guys, and that makes people run away. But, I mean, here they seem to be pretty interested in what we're doing and what we're trying to achieve.
Yeah, well, when I see my doctor putting a glove on, I get frightened, so
yeah,
I understand.
You should.
Okay, so I'm going to ask one more question before I send it off to Francine. Now, we've talked about some of the studies that you've done about gloves, and this is, I mean, we've been talking about having you on our podcast since, what, May?
Yeah.
Long time.
Months.
So we're very excited to have you on here, but we'd love to kind of for you to talk about where the glove industry is going. Your study about pathogens kind of freaked the heck out of Francine and I. So what's going on with the pathogens in gloves and what makes your gloves better and some of the competitors that you may have that are actually, I mean, nobody wants to talk good about their competitors, but there has to be somebody out there. What's the difference between your good competitors that you're like, oh my gosh, yeah, you're buying those gloves, those are good, versus bad competitors that why even use gloves? You might as well just use your bare hands.
It's a big question. I guess to go right back to the very beginning, when we came into the US and we looked at the way that the market operates here, and it's obviously crazy big. The US used pre-pandemic, we estimated 328 million gloves a day. So that's billions a year. And if you start to think about the US government mandates that you have to have 90 days stock of critical PPE, where on earth do they put 90 days of 328 million gloves? And so these are some of the problems that the infrastructure in the US has, and I guess why there's some US companies setting up glove manufacturing, which is good. But one of the things that people don't realise in the food industry is that FDA food compliance is solely focused on chemical content and chemical migration of the gloves. And that test is done once in the country of origin for the lifetime of the glove. And no doubt the factory makes sure that the glove they send to the lab is perfect. That gets approved by the FDA, and they can put FDA food compliance on their box. There is no requirement for that glove to be clean, and there's no requirement for it to be intact. Now, where there's a real problem is we then look at the FDA good manufacturing practice, and that says gloves should be clean, sanitary, and intact. But the FDA food compliance doesn't say that they have to be any of those things. So who's responsible for that? And we think the supplier is. And we think the supply industry in all countries, but particularly in the US now that we're here, has been really lax at making sure that their customers are getting good quality, intact and clean gloves. Now, these are not sterile gloves, so no one's expecting them to be sterile, but they should be clean, especially of dangerous things. So we decided that 5 years ago, we talked to a guy called Barry Michaels, who's a microbiologist and hand glove guru. He's written articles dating back to 2000 on gloves and glove cleanliness and hand cleanliness. And we helped support him do this series of tests. We tested 2,800 gloves, 26 brands of medical and food compliant gloves. We found over 50% of them had indicators of fecal matter. We found 260 other pathogens, including E. coli, Salmonella, Listerias, viable pathogens. We developed a system, which I'm not a microbiologist, but he's developed this test process that's relatively affordable and very quick. So we lot test our gloves coming into the country and make sure that they reach a good standard of cleanliness and don't have things like E. coli on. And for example, he's estimated with some of the gloves we tested that there's at least a 10,000 to 100,000 coliform units per glove. So you put that onto a box of gloves, a box of 100, there's over a million coliform units in a box of 100 of mixed pathogens and fungus and so on. So every time you bring a box of gloves into your food processing facility, you're bringing in potentially a million plus coliform units. Now, is that a problem? I'm not a microbiologist, but if some of them take hold in a dirty corner of a plant or, you know, they find a space to start propagating, then you've got a problem.
Yeah.
And so that's where we're coming from. And I've been involved in the industry now for 20 years. I've visited countless factories all over the world. And the very, very first factory, just to tell you a wee bit of a story, the very, very first factory I went to, I won't tell you the country, so I don't embarrass anybody because they've actually just recently closed down the factory. But I went into the packing room, and the packing room was an open shed with tables with piles of gloves, and there were 10 or 12 ladies around the table packing gloves into 25s and then into 50s, then into 100s. And one guy's job was to go around the piles of gloves and wipe off the cockroaches and the flies before they went into the boxes. This is 2005 or 6, it's a long time ago. And it just struck me then, these were going into American examination glove brand boxes and being sent to the States. And it just struck me, that's where we started our research. We're thinking, well, how can this happen? And how can this, and it's, the fact is, there's no, they're not doing anything wrong. There is no requirement for that glove to be clean or intact. It only has to meet these chemical composition tests. And then the further irony is, once they have that chemical composition test, they're never checked again on entry. And so they, to use the FDA terminology, they enter the country without the benefit of inspection. So we know for a fact, we've had one customer who's had a cannabis recall a couple of years ago because they found a carcinogen on their glove and it transferred onto the cannabis product and they had a recall and a fine. And that glove is probably used, and I'm not going to mention the brand because they'd sue me for one thing, but it's probably used in about 30% of the food industry in the US, And so workers in the food industry are wearing that glove with the carcinogen on it, but no one's ever testing in the food industry. It's the fact that the cannabis industry is really well monitored in some states, and so they're testing for these things. So it's just an area we just think we need to raise the standard, and we're happy to help our competitors and colleagues and anybody else do that. But we think it's a really big food safety gap that no one's talking about, and so that's why we're trying to raise the awareness.
Wow. So the name of our podcast is Don't Eat Poop, and what you've just shed light on is, so if we're using those gloves, essentially, breeding poop.
50% of them have fecal coliform on them.
Well, and then there's the E. coli and the, you know, the other things that he threw in there. So, yeah, interesting. Fascinating story. Thank you for sharing.
No trouble.
Reminded me of some of the restaurants I've been in.
I mean, you know,
Not a large portion of them.
I was living in California, and fecal transplants were the thing there for a while. I mean, you were getting them free. I mean, it was like, you know, free with your gloves.
So yeah, I mean,
you're referring to an episode we did, actually. You could sell your poop.
So, I know, that's right.
I was asked an interesting question. So the book I wrote has some graphic details in it. And I was asked, do you feel that those, all that graphic detail was necessary? And I thought, you know, that's a good question, but an interesting question. My answer to that question is yes. You know, I do think that these graphic details that we're sharing are necessary, because a lot of times they're sugar-coated over. And the awareness needs to be there. So many people dance around these details, and people are afraid to share them. Now, I don't think that we need to go out there and, you know, blast names all over the place, because that's going to get us in trouble. But I think it's important to share those graphic details, because how else are we going to fix them?
Yeah, we're sort of joking around about the feces and things, but when you watch the movies like Poisoned and you see the effects of foodborne illness, and we have a poster on our booth here that says the problem is invisible, but the consequences aren't. And that's the thing. And so, but this, you know, Aspergillus, which is a fungus, was found on the glove samples that we tested. There's been direct correlation between gloves and the death of neonatal kids in hospitals in the States as a result of the contamination of the glove. And so these are kids, and you don't want to see the pictures of those kids covered in these lesions that, you know, 4 to 6 to 8 week premature kids covered in lesions, and it kills them because there's nothing you can do about it.
I think there's a perception when we share those details in their graphic that it's for sensationalism, and it's not. And I think, you know, our personalities are what they are because we're not desensitized necessarily, but it's our way of dealing with some of the things that we deal with. And so therefore there's this perception again that we are doing it for the sensationalism when we're not. It's very, very serious.
One of the challenges we really have is everybody is inundated with gloomy news every day, you know, just generally. And here comes the glove guy, and we're going to give you more of it. And so we try and turn it in. We don't sell gloves. We sell food safety and minimizing risk. And that's what we try and go in and say. We just want to, and I guess on a purely commercial note, we say to our guys, our superpower has been invisible. The best glove person that anyone can have is someone who doesn't need to think about their gloves ever again, because they turn up, they're well-priced, and they work, and they don't cause problems. So the procurement person can go off and do the important stuff, not order gloves. And that's our focus, is how do we do that? So it is a real challenge, Francine, to try and paint this in a positive light, rather than if you don't do this, you're going to get sued or you're going to kill somebody or whatever.
Right. Well, and our podcast is very tongue-in-cheek. You know, we deal with a lot of very serious issues, but we tend to have unique personalities and we can be a bit sarcastic. But we also, you know, like you said, there's so much doom and gloom. We want people to listen. And nobody's going to tune in if we don't bring a different perspective to what we do. Matt, you wanted to say something?
Yeah, because when people are putting gloves on, they're putting gloves on because they feel like they're making their product safer. They're increasing the quality of their product. And if those gloves are actually decreasing the safety of the product, then that's very sad, because the client of that glove manufacturer is doing a disservice to their clients by providing them a product that is doing the exact opposite of what the desired results are.
Yeah. And but the trouble is, There's two assumptions. One is that there's an assumption that gloves are somehow safe out of the box. And the other assumption is that gloves are allowed to rip three times before you get a pair on, which is wrong.
So I, you know, in all the years, I used to see people put on like five pair of gloves at one time.
Yeah, I've seen that. I've seen that. And you can imagine, I won't mention the company, but we sell to one company. And before we went in there, the butcher who worked sort of behind the glass, you know, doing the butchering for the retail store, he had three gloves on each hand. I said, why are you doing that? And he said, because they rip. And I said, can you imagine the glove juice that comes out when the third one rips on either hand? You get this beautiful spray. And he said, well, the steak's pre-salted.
Oh, yeah, you know, it's, yeah, they told me because I don't want to wash my hands. So they would just see, yeah.
I know, it's craziness. It's a battle. But I mean, you know, I think a lot of the stuff we've already heard about today, things are advancing and people are becoming much more cognizant of these details that we hadn't thought about before, maybe.
And until I read your first article, well, Matt and I talking about it, it's like, my God, did you read this? And it never occurred to me that the gloves came in contaminated. Now, I've seen open boxes that were stored in places that they shouldn't be stored, but it never, ever occurred to me that the gloves came in contaminated. I mean, you just wouldn't think.
No.
You wouldn't think that that would be the case.
I think probably the regulations haven't caught up with how these gloves are being used, because the regulations are good in that the chemical content is vital, that you're not putting some bad chemical onto the food product. The downside of that is no one ever checks. So we're trusting the factories in Southeast Asia in particular to do the right thing. And I'm not sure that's well-founded in often cases. So, but that's exactly that comment, Francine, is we've never thought about gloves. You know, I remember speaking to an organic ice cream manufacturer in California. He said, I've been in this business 12 years and I've never once questioned where our gloves come from, what's on them, what's in them, and all that sort of thing. And he's selling organic product, let alone just other product. And, you know, ice cream, Listeria, all these things, it's, you don't want to find that sort of stuff.
Yeah, it's an assumption. So let me ask you another question. What does trust mean to you?
What does trust mean to you? That's a great question. And sideways, which is good. Trust, I mean, I'm an optimist and I believe in people. And one of the things we often do, my CFO makes us do NDAs all the time when we're dealing with various people. And I don't like doing that because you're starting a conversation with, I don't trust you, so you have to sign a piece of paper. And so maybe it's a little bit naive these days to do that, but I just trust that people are basically good. And I know there's not good people. You know, people are born good. They're not born bad. It's what we do to them after that that changes them. So we just have this sort of, maybe it's a New Zealand thing, maybe it's just me being naive, but we have this basic feeling that we trust people to start. And we've been burnt a couple of times, but, you know, that's more for them than me in that case. It's just something, I'd much rather trust people than have to be looking over my shoulder all the time.
I like that. Yeah, I like that. So what are you enjoying about the Food Safety Consortium?
I love being in, this will be slightly off the cuff, I love being in the east coast of the USA because the IPAs are great here, which is the beer. So that's possibly not the answer to your question. I tend to like beer. Yeah, I love talking about what we do. We're really, really passionate about saving the world one glove at a time. And it's just so thank you for the opportunity to give us a platform like this. But it's just, I love talking to the industry and, you know, and educating people and being educated myself. And so it's just this community stuff that the food safety in particular, the food community is a really strong and close one because we're all trying to do the same thing within the limitations of our jobs. And so I think that gives us this camaraderie, which is really nice.
And your passion in everything that you do, whether it's writing or speaking, talking about the industry, always comes through and everything and everything that you do.
I'm pleased to hear that.
So if there was one thing that you could change about the consortium, what would it be?
There's nothing obvious. Normally I'd say the coffee, but even the coffee's pretty good. So, I mean, I can't really fault it. Probably, I don't know why they chose this location. Someone did say that there's like half of the population of the US is within, you know, 3 hours of here or something. I'm not sure if that's true, but it is a little bit out of the way to get. So that would be the only thing. But I think next year's in Washington, I believe, DC. So I mean, that's a minor complaint. No, it's been a great show. I mean, we've only been here a few hours, as you said, but we've had a couple of days of getting to know the place, and it's a nice, simple event. It's not too overdone. It's just really nice.
Cool. Well, But anything else you want to ask, Matt?
Yeah, I don't want to ask anything. I just want to make sure you know, and thank you for sharing to our population of, you know, obviously we don't want to eat poop. And that, and if 50% of the gloves have fecal coliform on them, just like what we said when we first did our podcast, and that's actually how we met you, was we did the podcast, and then you wrote a whole entire article on top of our podcast on LinkedIn.
Yeah. I can't help myself.
No, which is great, actually. It was good. So, and then you kind of invited yourself on our podcast. Yep. And unfortunately, this is the first time but this is the great thing about Food Safety Consortium and the like is, you know, we're able to then connect. We keep saying, let's do this, but now we're able to do it. So
that's great.
Don't eat poop. And that includes not off of gloves.
Okay. I'll do my best. Thank you. I appreciate it very much. And well done on building this platform. I think it's great.
Great.
It's a real opportunity that no one's taken before. So I think it's really starting to have some traction from what I can see.
And you have more studies coming. So when those come out, if you want to talk about them, we would love to have you back on. Not wait for a conference. We can set it up.
Let's do it.
Perfect. Thanks. Thank you so much, Steve.
Thank you. Bye.